morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. We're going to take things a little bit out of order today because, not surprisingly, Representative Wisnant is here. And we'll, when we see Representative Witt and Representative Comp, we'll go back to them. So I'll start with a public hearing on House Bill 2973. Brian is joining us this morning. Brian, would you introduce yourself, please, and tell us about yourself?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Brian Theiss. I'm a graduate student in the School of Public Policy at Oregon State University, and I'm working in the area of higher ed and veterans affairs.
Great. He'll be joining us from time to time as relevant bills come up, and we're lucky to have you. Thanks for being here. So are you're on House Bill 2973, correct?
2645.
Okay, we're going to start with 2973. Wisnant, do you want to give us a
thank you. Good morning.
To get started, please.
Good morning, Chair Reed and honorable colleague committee members. 1 hour earlier than we should have been here, but we're here. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant, State Representative, House District 53. We've all, for all what, 5 weeks now heard about the cost of higher education increasing more than anything else in our lifestyle, in our lives. In this committee, we've worked hard looking at ways to bring down the cost of education. Why? To be sure that we have more people can afford to go, so it's lower cost to ensure increased access. We heard, this is my second time on this committee, and we've heard a lot about different kind of degrees and different kind of programs to bring the cost down. And one interesting thing is that some states have actually come up with what they call a $10,000 college degree. Last session, Representative Johnson and I, as member of this committee, we submitted bills to try to bring down the cost. House Bill 4076 directed Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and Western Oregon to develop pilot projects for fixed-cost BA degrees. It died in committee, Ways and Means Committee, passed out of committee. Then we introduced House Bill 3472, which directed the HEC to consider the creation of a proposed pilot program called Pay Forward, Pay Back. This was Senator Devlin's bill that we heard Friday.
Senator Denbrough.
Devlin, I apologize.
Yeah, no problem.
Give me some breaks here.
Yeah, that's fine. It's early.
It's way early.
Senator Denbrough's bill, which was actually added to a bill that that I had and was in 3472 that tasked the HEC to study whether Oregon universities can successfully implement a tuition freeze and to analyze Western Oregon's Western tuition promise. Florida's Finish in Four program, and it was supposed to say $10,000 degree. The HEC should report on the study during the 2014 regular session. I didn't get that report, but they did do a report on the pay it forward, pay it back, as you got yesterday. The governor signed House Bill 3472, July 29, 2013. I introduced 2973 this session with a plan to get feedback and then submit a reasonable bill which called for the universities to develop a degree as inexpensive as possible but with value. Interesting, however, after the bill was introduced and scheduled by Chair Reed, I was visited by several of our Oregon University presidents. I expected they were going to tell me that what are you asking for here, Wisnant? But you know what they did? They came in and told me they were working on a $10,000 degree. They liked the challenge. I was surprised because I told them the idea was not a $10,000 degree. The idea is as low as possible degree is worth something that you could come up with. So you'll also hear today from OSAC about their ideas for amendments, making this bill more generic, but working towards a degree, less expensive degrees. You've also been given, I gave you a handout with Mark Johnson's letterhead on it, and it actually shows you some degrees that universities have come up with. And I was actually surprised at what degrees they're offering: chemistry, computer science, geology, information systems, mathematics. I thought we'd have to come up with like a generic, you know, general studies BA degree or something like that. But these universities are working on it. It calls for certain paths to get here, and that's what the university presidents would come up with, I hope. So I would be glad to take questions, and you are going to hear, like I said, from OSAC. I don't know if anyone else will testify. But I'd like, what I'm asking Chair Reed and the committee members to do is to allow me to work with the university's OSAC and HEC and bring this committee back an amended bill, which does challenge our universities to produce a path to a BA degree as close to $10,000 as possible.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions? Representative Rudin.
I love the idea, and I just wish I had thought of it.
Well, I didn't think, Mr. Chair, I didn't think about it, Representative Rudin. The Florida and Texas were the first states to do it, and now we've got Wisconsin.
Do you have in mind certain quality measures? I mean, how do you determine the quality of a university degree?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Reardon, that would be the university. They can't offer a degree unless it would pass their accreditation. So, but you know, they've talked to me, like, you know, what we're probably going to have to do, this degree, there have to be some requirements. If you want to get there, here's what you have to do. And one of the things is you probably have to come to the university with maybe a semester of IP or AP courses or college credit out of high school. You'd have to go to community college probably for 2 years to bring down cost. So, again, I think the thing here is, and I was really optimistic, was about the presidents coming in saying, Wisner, this is dumb. You know, you can't do this. They came in and said, we're trying. We're working to see what we can do. And that's what we need.
So is that among the amendments you might consider? The bill, as it's written, of course, says it must be offered at the lowest cost possible, not to exceed $10,000. The $10,000 limit must include 4 years' cost of tuition, fees, books, blah, blah, blah. Those are among the things you're...
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
We have great people in LC, and we know the burdens they go through.
Yes. So. Just making sure. Representative McEwen.
Chair Reed, without belaboring this, I think it's a fascinating idea, and I'm trying to create in my mind this nexus between what we're doing with 40-40-20 and incur. We have a number of high school kids who are graduating with an associate degree and a high school degree in the same day. And I don't know how you marry that with this concept, but encouraging students to take full academic course loads all the way through high school, getting past that point where we're taking two or three periods off when we're seniors because we finished our credit requirements, has to be kind of an approach of the past. We can't do that any longer. So if we can somehow marry this idea with encouraging that academic rigor in high school so students are coming out well prepared to go into a program that has a significant cost reduction or a cost certain approach, just fascinates me, and I'm anxious to hear more about this as this unfolds.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. I amend that. That's what it's going to take. I think you're going to have to lay out a path. You can't get there, you know, by doing it for 6 years. You're going to have to do it maybe in 3 years. And you, students are doing that. I think I've told this committee before that one of the lobbyists in this building, his son went to University of Oregon, and he had a semester, and his roommate had a whole year coming out of high school. So.
And there are those who can actually come out with two if you work at it. And we have students who are people are ramping up to that, and we need to encourage it and support it, and maybe this is a way to take a look at doing
that. Mr. Chair, I think this is not for everyone, but I think this could fit a certain people with really low income that want to, you know, you get in the system, get your degree. So many companies now will pay you to get your master's, so it does help low-income or kids from low-income families have an opportunity to get a degree.
Thank you. Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thanks for your work on this, Representative. I would just add a comment that I think one of the factors that we should encourage is allowing each university to tailor and craft those type of degree pathways that are kind of unique to the area of the state that they serve and the type of students that they most often serve. In our proposal we had last February, that was what we were hoping, is that the TRUs could craft those degree pathways that are particular to their geographical representation and so forth, which is really meaningful for those students in those high schools that are obtaining that extra dual accreditation and so forth, or kids in their students in community college too. You get, you know, you show up with your toolbox full of, you know, XYZ, whatever we determine that is, and then here's your pathway to a degree, which is a pathway to a career. And if we can pull that off, then I think we're in a very good place. So thanks for your work, and I'm happy to help you anyway.
To Chair and Representative Johnson, of course, I need your help and your leadership.
We're here for you.
But, yeah, I think that's good things said about it, and if we can get it going, I think it would look good for Oregon and our education system, and Representative Johnson put the end. It's not just a degree, it's a career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just look good. Don't leave yet. Representative Gallegos may have a question, too.
I'm just trying to get my head around that. You know, we talk about this being a good model for low-income first generation. I just can't help but think about, again, creating sort of a system that is not really geared for that community. I mean, we got to appreciate that a lot of the learning values and opportunities, you know, are not there for low-income folks. And I guess what I'm trying to think about is, you know, as we talk about creating pathways, even in high school, and certain students getting, you know, a full year in, I just wonder how many first-generation low-income kids are really going to be in that kind of a pathway. So it's just something I think we need to think about.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I understand what you're saying, but this is just another option, and nothing I think in the bill talks about asking for the state. I mean, we're not taking away opportunity grants. We're not saying anything. We're just asking the presidents to look at their staff and their teams and see if they could find some creative way to bring down the cost for certain people. It may not be low income. It may be middle class that can't get other help. But I appreciate the comments.
Well, and even if it doesn't have anything to do with other help, if the quality is there, mm-hmm. The market and the product might be attractive enough for all kinds of people to want to pursue it. I appreciate it.
And it'll the testimony, Mr. Chair, that we've had too, that now the books are going to be so inexpensive, we can help all families.
We have work to do on that too.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you.
So we have two people who have signed up to testify: Mario Parker Milligan and Dana Richardson. Please. All right, do you want to get us started, please?
Please, thank you. Chair Reed, Vice Chairs Gallegos, and Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mario Parker Milligan. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. We represent over 120,000 public university and community college students. We support the merits of this bill and would love to continue to work with Representative Wisnett on his amendments and the HEC. In general, we love the idea of affordable degrees, and as close as we can get to a $10,000 degree, taking into account everything that students are having to pay for, textbooks, tuition, fees, housing, childcare, there's a lot of variables at play. But with that said, I think we have an avenue to get there, and this is a good next step to have institutions and the HEC do additional research and look into ways to bring the cost of degrees down.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions? I think we're going to probably end up on some more technical questions for Dana, perhaps, so let's see if there are any questions for Mario.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. We just want to put on the record that we're happy to work with Representative Wisnett, the students, and the institutions to vet this concept and really look closely at the pathways that we can develop to provide quality and lower cost degrees to students. Mm-hmm. This can include things like credit for prior learning, credits that you're earning in high school, going through a community college for the first couple of years as we've started to look at the concept. So we're ready and willing to work on the concept.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Dana? We're a quiet group this morning. Representative Wisnant.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I thank both of them for their testimony. We've talked offline about this. I think the key thing that surprised me that I don't know if I've told Dana, but I've told Mario, is the president's coming to me. So I think any work group we have, I'd like to see it from the bottom up, maybe, you know, this time instead of the heck. The heck can oversee and provide that kind of guidance. And but to see the president step forward and say, we want to work on this, we're going to see what we can do, I think that was what really excited me. So who I think the work group will try to do is get input from the, at least the regional universities on this.
That's great. That's great. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify on House Bill 2973. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? I don't see any, so before we close the public hearing, it appears, Representative Wisnant, we're eager to see your amendments. So we'll look forward to hearing from you when you're ready to come back to this discussion. So close the public hearing on House Bill 2973, and Representative Witt has arrived, so we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2645. Please come forward, and while you do, Brian's going to give us a summary of the bill, please.
House Bill 2645 requires community colleges and public universities to consult with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to establish priority enrollment for qualified first-time veterans or active service members, removes the requirement for proof of residency and time limit to apply, requires ODVA certification.
Very good. Thank you.
This was also at the House Veterans Affairs and Emergency Preparedness Committee and passed with a 6-1 vote.
Okay, great. Representative Witt, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Committee, good morning. I'm State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31, appearing before you this morning in support of House Bill 2645A engrossed. This bill would create a priority enrollment system for active members of the U.S. military or qualified veterans. The program might look something like some examples that it might achieve would possibly be enrollment in a small seminar, perhaps, which would otherwise be difficult to get into. Perhaps enrollment in a high-demand course, which would be necessary for graduation, or perhaps a pick of the litter time slot for a particular course, which might enable the veteran to better meet his or her scheduling requirements, perhaps for work or for family obligations. All of this would, I think, be exceedingly helpful for veterans, some of whom may look a little different or may have different life experiences than the typical college or university student. May help them, those who might be experiencing some significant challenges, to be able to better fit into the college and university environment. For all of those reasons, I would strongly urge your support for this bill. And I just wanted to note that this bill was actually the idea of Jaime Rodriguez, who is a veterans advocate from PCC's Rock Creek campus. He's not only a veterans advocate, but he is a very, very large advocate for his campus as well as the whole community college system. So I thank you for this opportunity, and would be happy to try and answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. I do want to note for the committee, there's some good testimony in OLIS from Stephen Gordon, who's a VA counselor at PCC as well, probably works with Jaime. One thing that I think is pretty interesting about that, you probably all know this, is the clock starting on education benefits, and as it rolls towards zero, the urgency, I think you were referring to, of getting into the right classes continues to increase. Any questions for Representative Witt? Representative Reardon.
Well, just a statement of support, really. I remember going into the Navy for 4 years, getting out, and I truly felt I was 4 years behind everybody else in my earnings potential. And so I think it's, you know, a matter of fairness and respect for the people who have served. So thank you for doing
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, Representative Reardon, thank you very much.
Thank you. Notice there are a couple of amendments. We're going to hear from Jack Mills and John Wyckoff. Are you aware of those? Are you okay with those? Any comments on potential further amendments?
I'm aware of the amendments, Mr. Chairman. I frankly think that some of the amendments, there are certain liberties that are taken in this building at times, and I think there's a certain level of discourtesy that runs rampant in this building in terms of amendments, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Could you describe for us the whatever you think we should know about the conversation that happened in the Veterans Committee? I think Brian mentioned there was 6-1 vote. Anything we should know from that discussion? Or there was certainly an amendment that it was adopted there. Any background we should know?
I can't speak for that, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Other questions, Representative Gallegos?
Yeah, I just want to comment that I think for any of us, I think getting through registration was half the battle of getting through college. And if we can ease this for, particularly for veterans, I think this is a good bill. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gallegos, appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Witt. I think we've exhausted our questions for the moment.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That brings us to Jack Mills and John Wyckoff, please. Did you coordinate your ties this morning? It's pretty close.
Good morning. Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jock Mills. I'm Director of Government Relations at Oregon State University. I'm just going to speak briefly to the -2 amendments, which were to the bill and with which we conferred with Representative Witt and concerning the content. The purpose of this bill is to address the issue of having veterans who were first in line but who haven't gone through an academic counseling program, which doesn't do them much in terms of favors if they're registering for classes that don't meet what their academic goals are. So all these amendments do is ensure that if you're a first-term veteran, you get first in line going through the academic prerequisite counseling you need to do to register for the first time at OSU. So we get you on the right track, and then you're first in line. So that's the intent of this, was just to ensure that we didn't get people first in line and then being registered for classes that weren't really what they wanted to take or what was going to get them where they wanted to do. And that's the intent of the -2 amendments. I can also speak to the fiscal impact that we've identified with this bill. And our sense is we've surveyed all 7 institutions. This will require a change in the way, everything's always done by computer, and changing the way things are done by computer costs money. We've identified some basic startup costs associated with doing that, but nothing that's going to kick this thing into a big fiscal impact that we can't do and that would, from our view, require us to need to go down to Ways and Means to have this accomplished. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So one question I have, unfortunately, we don't have, or at least I don't have, the -2s in OLIS. Does it contemplate or mention other institutions? As you talked about the specific proposal or the specific process you have at OSU, is there something
Thank
similar
you.
At the
yeah.
other institutions?
I should have begun my testimony with indicating that we no longer have a system that coordinates the way we testify before the legislature, and I drew the straw on this issue. We have more veterans registered at OSU than the other institutions, and that's why I'm here. So I'm here representing all 7 of the institutions. We're all in this together. I apologize for not being clear about that from the get-go. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does to a degree, but do the -2s, given that I don't see them, we can't look at them right now, are we confident that takes care of any issues that the other institutions would have with respect to any process that they have at their campuses?
I'm not aware of any other issues that the other institutions have
okay.
with this bill, speaking for the 4-year public universities.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Wyckoff?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Oregon Community College Association, and I'm here to speak briefly to the Dash 3 amendments, which we worked with Representative Witt's office on, and they are just intended for some of our smaller colleges that do not have a priority registration system. They would have had to create one in this without the amendment, which would have been costly. And the reason that some of the smaller colleges tend not to have them is they tend not to have waiting lists, and so just haven't had to use a priority registration system. And so in their view, this just would probably not be an issue. But were they to end up in a situation where they had waiting lists, they would most likely start a priority registration system and then would be subject to this. For the most part, it's really our smaller colleges. Clatsop was one of them where President Galizio had mentioned that he didn't typically get waiting lists. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. That completes the list on House Bill 2645. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? I don't see anyone. So I did find the... Oh, sorry. Please. Please come forward.
My wife, active member.
All three of you? No? How did I miss three hands?
Three for one.
Okay. Good morning.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gordon. I'm a U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We have your written testimony on all this.
Great.
Grateful for that, too.
I just wanted to mention that we have 1,200 veterans receiving VA education benefits at Portland Community College. And our veterans receiving VA education benefits can only take required courses. They cannot take any courses they might want to take. So if they're unable to register for courses that they need, even one course could reduce their housing allowance by up to 25% or even more if they are not able to get more than one course. That's one of the main points that I wanted to make sure you knew. And the states with laws already enacted are Washington, California, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Tennessee. I understand that you already have my written testimony, so I'd like to defer to my colleague, Sarah Elsasser.
Thank you.
Members of the committee and Mr. Chairman, I'm a TRIO advisor at Portland.
And if you could start introducing yourself, that'd be very helpful.
Thank
too.
You. Also, I'm not familiar with the program.
No problem. So. You're doing fine. The other thing is that the microphone distorts if it's real close, so you don't have to be very close to it at all.
How's
perfect.
That?
That's great. Thank you.
My name is Sarah Elsasser. I'm a TRIO advisor at Portland Community College. And for those of you who may not be familiar with TRIO, it's a U.S. Department of Education program, long-term mentoring program to support the completion and retention for low-income first-generation students. So my ears were pricking up in your earlier discussion. And we actually, at Portland Community College, began looking at how to better support our veteran students about 3 years ago. There was a group of us who had noticed that our veteran students were less likely to complete a degree. They would begin, they would enter PCC with great motivation, but they would go away. And so we wanted to figure out what was going on and really design ways to be able to eliminate barriers and provide support for them. So one of our faculty members took a sabbatical, did a lot of research over about 6 months, put together a proposal, and we began to see what we could do to implement pieces of that proposal. One of them, top of our list actually, was to get veterans resource centers situated at our different campuses. And we've been successful at Sylvania. We've been partially successful at other campuses, and that's a process that's still continuing. The other thing that was at the top of our list was creating a priority registration system for veteran students. And there are a number of reasons for this. We're actually prepared to share some of those with you, but if it's not new information, that's something that we could defer. Kind of up to the members of the committee.
Hard to tell if it's new information without hearing it, I suppose.
Okay, great. Right,
please go ahead.
So I want to tell you with great pleasure that PCC has made the decision to implement priority registration beginning summer term for our our veteran students who are receiving VA benefits, and I'll talk about that in a second. But we put together, a work group of us put together a report. We surveyed students at the
interrupt
school.
Interrupt for just a moment.
I'm very sorry. Thank you for your testimony and your service. I'm a veteran, so I appreciate this. I'm confused at why the bill, and you're talking about active duty. Active duty do not have benefits yet.
I actually said benefited veterans.
Yes, ma'am, at the end, but the bill and everything's talking about active duty also.
True, yes. And
they don't have benefits until they're out.
That's true. What I am, my intention is explaining to the committee the brief process that PSU went through to
priority registration.
Yes, to, as an institution, come to this decision of, yeah, we're going to offer priority registration, and how we want to approach that, because there are several different issues that really need to be determined.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. So PCC's made the decision to do it. We will roll this out summer term. It's been coming for a while, but we're really very pleased and excited about this. So our compelling reasons, and I'll just read them. So most student veterans receive an educational benefit which pays tuition and provides a living stipend equal to 36 months of full-time enrollment in school. This benefit must be used within either 10 or 15 calendar years of the discharge date from military service, varying by benefit chapter. Students use this benefit for a total of 12 terms or 4 academic years at 3 terms per year. So basically they've got 4 years as they most typically would attend school. To be on track to finish a bachelor's degree without running out of benefits, students must complete an associate's degree in 6 terms, or 2 years. Okay. Data collected in the Million Records Project of the Student Veterans of America indicates that only 29% of student veterans earn their associate degree in 2 years. That's pretty appalling. The implication in this data is that the remaining 71% of student veterans would be unlikely to complete a bachelor's degree before exhausting their educational benefits. Therefore, in order to complete a degree before exhausting educational benefits, student veterans must select classes which apply directly to their chosen degree. VA regulations require that students receiving educational benefits must only take classes which directly apply to their declared degree. VA benefit students are not free to choose widely from elective courses if courses they need are full. Additionally, many student veterans attempt to register into classes which fulfill more than one requirement to maximize their benefit. Often, these classes fill quickly because other student veterans are following the same strategy. PCC's student veterans have identified difficulty registering into required classes as a barrier which directly affects persistence and degree completion. If students are not able to get into the classes they need to be full-time students, their tuition benefit and living stipend is prorated. For example, if a full-time student is not able to register into one necessary 3-credit class, their stipend is reduced by 25%. Since many student veterans have families, a diminished living stipend often means that that student must leave school to work and support a family. When students leave school and enter the workforce, economic pressures make it more difficult to return to school. Okay. Any questions?
Thank you. I wasn't sure if you were thinking about what was coming next. are there questions? Representative Gallegos?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. I think it just, for me, really points to the fact that there's so many variables to consider when we're talking about this kind of support. I will say, too, as long time ago that I used my veterans benefits, actually with Portland Community College. But again, as I said, I think thank you, because you gave me a lot to think about. Thank you.
Well, as an institution, as we began looking at this issue, there were some questions that came up. Questions like, for example, do we restrict priority registration, which in PCC means first group registration? So these students would be in that first pool of students to be able to register for classes. But do we limit this benefit to students who currently are receiving VA educational benefits. It's easy for us as an institution. They're identified in our system. All we have to do is put one code in our tracking system and send them an email. So that's simple. There's no cost associated with it. Or do we want to include families who are receiving educational benefits but are not themselves veterans? Do we want to offer this benefit to all student veterans? We'd love to do that. We're still talking about how we can identify those students.
Representative Hayden.
Chair Reed, just help me play catch up here a little bit. It's been a while since I've been in college. On the priority registration currently, who is that and who isn't in that?
So PCC uses a system that is based entirely on credits earned. It's really intended to allow those students who are close to earning a degree to have first pick of classes. So a student who might have earned 85 credits and they need two more classes for their degree, they're going to be first to be able to register. It's problematic for students who are brand new. They're registering at the end of the second day of registration, and in PCC that means many classes are full.
So even though even though I really like the concept, always try and look at the other side. Who might this affect? Would this maybe affect somebody that's just one class away from getting that four-year degree and being able to get out in the workforce, or does it not? Even though I love the concept of the program, I haven't heard anything. Who might it affect, either positively or adversely, get their degree?
That's a fair question. And truly, I doubt if there would be a large impact. At PCC, we have about 1,200 student veterans. Our system is huge. As you all know, I think we're somewhere around 85,000 enrollments per year. So we're big. So we're really talking about a relatively small, it's a large number of veterans, but in terms of our whole system, it's pretty small.
Thank you. Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Reed. You just answered my question. I was trying to get a sense of the scope of how many veterans compared to your student population, so thank you.
We've gotten a little distracted with questions. I want to give you a chance to offer your testimony as well, please.
I don't want to get it too close.
You're fine.
Yep. Thank you, Chairperson, Vice Chairs, and committee members. For the record, my name's Kimberly Douthit. I can spell that if you need me to.
Nope.
I'm a Veterans Resource Specialist at Portland Community College, and I coordinate the Veterans Resource Center at our Sylvania campus. I'm a U.S. Coast Guard veteran, a Navy wife, and the child of a Vietnam veteran, and former student veteran myself at City College of San Francisco. A state which does offer priority registration for student veterans for a number of years. And we were reviewing the draft of the House bill that came out of the last committee in our work group meeting. And we noticed, like Sarah said, at PCC, we have decided to implement priority registration in the easiest way that we can to start and then massage it if we need to, if the bill is passed. So for us, that meant veterans who are receiving a VA benefit, since they are already tagged in our system, or any vet that needs to be certified for their benefits through the VA, because we can track them easily. We are also going to go ahead and offer it to family members receiving a VA benefit, which includes dependents' educational assistance and transferred GI Bill benefits. I noticed, and we talked about in our meeting, that the bill does not address family members. So I was just wondering if that was in discussion. Since they are under the same time constraints to utilize benefits or similar time constraints as the veterans themselves. And also, I just wanted to say that active duty and reserve service members and National Guard members may receive a tuition assistance benefit, so they can receive an education benefit while they're still serving. It was just something I heard earlier I wanted to point out. So I think it's great that they'll be offered priority registration as well, because we haven't really been able to do that PCC yet, but perhaps later on Okay. When the bill is passed, we can do that. So I think that's excellent because it doesn't really affect them in any time limit, but may affect them getting into their classes that they need.
Very good. Are there questions for any of the other panelists? Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. We'll take your comments seriously and particularly your suggestions about some potential changes, so we'll consider those as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2645? Looking carefully now before I move on. So I did notice that we got an early fiscal impact statement, one of those of the variety for transmitting from one committee to another. The bill does not currently have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but we'll obviously need to get a more fleshed out fiscal impact statement before we take further actions. We have a couple of amendments, so we'll get those analyzed and be back to the bill, I think. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2645 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2681. Representative Comp, please come forward and Victoria will give us a summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2681 directs community colleges to use results from one of four nationally available standardized assessments for purpose of determining course placement of students, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
And as soon as I did that, I noticed your written testimony refers to both bills. Would you prefer that we open both bills simultaneously?
That would be helpful? Great.
Okay, so let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2682 at the same time. And Victoria, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2682 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to convene a work group of public university presidents to identify classes required for a bachelor's degree. Requires work group to post document setting forth findings on the commission's website and transmit documents to community colleges. Sunsets work group at convening of 2017 regular session of Legislative Assembly, declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
As usual, Victoria was way ahead of me. That was the original plan. I was looking at your testimony and not at Victoria's recommendations. My apologies. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Reed, Vice Chairs Gallegos and Wisnett. Good morning. My name is Betty Comp. I am a representative for House District 22 and here to testify on two bills, House Bill 2681 and House Bill 2682. There are other people here in the audience that are going to fill in the, I'm just going to give you the skeleton of these bills, and Dr. Roselli is here with some other people to help fill in the gaps and the spaces because, well, I'm supposed to be in the ed sub, but they work fine without me. These are a couple of issues that have come to me from constituents, and which is why I want to bring them forward at this time. Community colleges across the state for House Bill 2681 are using many different exams to determine student entrance and class choices. This has led to the same student not being able to find consistency or to be served properly in our community colleges. Frequently, they're referred to a remedial class to take before they get into their regular core classes. One school may serve students properly and consider that student is unable to take certain other classes. Another school may waive them and vice versa. This bill seeks to rectify the situation by allowing community colleges through a work group to choose four nationally available standardized assessments, which would hopefully result in more consistent uses. The one story I would share with you is from it's not a constituent, but a school. She's been a school administrator here in Salem Kaiser. Her son is a basketball player at good old OSU, and here he's having to take a full another term or two terms because when he started, he was told certain classes were going to qualify for part of his program, and they haven't. And I assure you, this mother and father aren't happy about that. And there are several other constituents that have come to me. And the one thing that I would share, another quick story, a student that has been reading for many, many years. Anyway, I took the entrance exam, and he was informed that he needed to take a remedial reading class. Well, I shouldn't say this, but this is my grandson. And I said, like heck you are. And I said, you go back to your counselor and say, you know, and question and ask to retake the exam or whatever you have to do. And then he did that. And, I mean, he was placed appropriately in his 252 math class. And then he moved on to easily a 100, 200 class in his reading on a second look. But when students don't have people and parents like I'm talking about looking out for them, well, they're using their Pell Grants, their financial aid, and taking some of these classes that possibly they don't really need. And so when we have, you know, we want to look at the situation, have a work group, and then see where we go from there. The other thing, on House Bill 2682, I really appreciate Representative Guy was saying that he went to community college too. And this experience happens to a lot of people too, where you take a class and then you get ready to transfer to your university, and then the university says, oh, we don't accept that class. And we want to make sure that this too is not happening. The bill is, there's an amended version. There's a dash. Hilda, what is it, a dash? Do you know what the amendment is?
Probably dash one.
But there is an amendment to this bill that Hilda helped me draft, so that sometimes I want to do things in kind of a big rush, and Hilda says now we have to be a little practical, so I'll let her talk about that. What I would do briefly is just be here for any questions about why these issues are important to me and why I brought them forward. But hopefully I didn't botch all this too much so you can understand it on early Monday morning after we've changed our clocks.
It's a good start, Representative Kopp. I think you've done a good job for me, at least. They are the dash ones. We have two people who signed up to testify and two chairs, so maybe we'll invite them forward and you can stick around for as long as you can. Dr. Selle and John Wyckoff.
Yes, because I can stay. Well, I'm covered in my sub right now.
John?
Okay.
And again, we have hearings open on both 2681 and 2682.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Hilda Rosselli, and I serve as the College and Career Readiness Director for the Oregon Education Investment Board. And the issue of placement tests has been of deep concern to many individuals that we've been talking with over the past year and a half. I'd like to bring to your attention some critical research that was conducted by Judith Scott Clayton in 2012 for the Community College Research Center at Teachers College, Columbia University. First of all, we know that the vast majority of community colleges use placement exams to screen entrants for access to college-level coursework. And we also know that the majority of tested students are referred to remediation as a result. And in fact, Education Northwest ran data on our most recently graduated high school students and found approximately 60% of those students are being placed in remediation when they are taking the placement tests. One of the concerns, of course, is this: students must pay tuition for those remedial courses, and the credits do not count towards graduation requirements. Estimation in 2004, so this is relatively old data, is that nationally the cost to schools to provide that remedial instruction was estimated at $1 billion or more per year. Very little research has been done regarding the validity of the exams as a screening tool. And in fact, one critique has been that quite often the individuals conducting the research are the test developers themselves. And we believe that students themselves are frequently unaware of the importance of the exams. Judith Scott Clayton's study set out to describe the relationship between placement exam scores and the grades in relevant college-level courses. She also looked at the practical trade-offs involved in raising or lowering cutoff scores, and she looked at what additional measures could improve placement outcomes. Her work was looking at large cohorts of degree-seeking students in both large urban community college systems, and she looked at success criteria of their grades in their first college-level courses. I'm just going to skip to some of the general findings and then share with you some specific Oregon information that you probably will want to know. First of all, her findings showed that the placement tests were more predictive in math than in English, and that there were alternative measures that were also doing a very good or better job at sorting students. One is using high school background measures to determine placements, looking at test scores and high school measures. But no combination is perfect, obviously. And we do have one community college, Clackamas Community College, that is currently testing out a pilot right now called PASS. It's not PASS as we used to know PASS, but another acronym. And it's really thinking more about different ways to advise students before they take a placement test. One of the things that's critical for us to be aware of is that students often really don't prepare for any kind of a placement test. And sometimes the staff themselves downplay the consequences of these exams. And in fact, some students have reported that they thought if they prepared for a test, they would be cheating. One author who studied this looked at it and said, it doesn't matter how you place, it's just to see where you are. Looking back now, I realize that's not true. That was the student's reflection. In Oregon specifically, the last time an analysis of placement tests was done was in 2012 by staff at the College and Community College Workforce Development Office. And they found that six different placement tests are used in community colleges and six different placement tests in four-year institutions. Furthermore, an analysis of the cut scores in reading alone show that there were 15 different cutoff scores for reading. And that's across a number of placement tests, but you can just imagine the level of confusion that this can cause for students, their families, and the advisors who work with them. Language has been suggested for an amendment to this particular House bill that would identify, as Representative Comp suggested, reducing the number of placement tests to four through a work group consideration. It furthermore directs that ODE would begin to develop crosswalks or alignments between existing tests and performance in college, as well as look at the Smarter Balanced Assessment test that students will be taking in 11th grade. We believe that as those scores move forward, there will be a way to look at how did students do when they moved on into college.
Can I interrupt for just a second? And I may be the only one who doesn't know this term. You said crosswalks. Could you explain that?
It's an alignment to look at how does a student's performance in one assessment predict or bear out their performance on another measure, in this case their successful movement and success in college classes.
Yes, that might be it. Thank you for the clarification.
Currently, there has been a group that for the past year and a half was composed of faculty, staff, and administrators from both community colleges, four-year institutions, and K-12 schools. They've been working on a proposal that would look at a waiver of placement tests for students who score a 3 or 4 on the Smarter Balanced in the 11th grade, given several conditions. One is that the student would successfully complete the next level of coursework in high school. This might even encourage some of them to take a fourth year of math. And also, they would have to move directly into post-secondary education following high school graduation and take the next class in the sequence so that there wouldn't be a gap in time. There is strong support for this proposal from both the Council for Instructional Administrators at the Community College and for the Provost Council. There were also several other suggested amendments in this, language in the amendment. One is to begin to strengthen the role of Oregon Department of Education to disseminate best practices from districts that are doing a great job of providing students and their families information about the importance of these placement tests, and also a direction to the districts to improve access for placement tests at the local high schools. I will share with you that we are aware of several high school districts that have worked a partnership with their community college to offer the placement test right at the high school. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a familiar venue right down the hall from their classroom, not having to go and find another building, another place in an unfamiliar environment. We'd like to look at what the results of those practices are. And then in addition, we'd like to see better direction provided to the districts about using assessment from placement tests to provide feedback to students on their college readiness. This is based in part on a number of findings that we have found to be very impressive from a very large school district in Texas that a number of individuals, including legislators, visited this late fall. The FAR, it's a multi-name district, the FAR San Juan Alamo Independent School District serves about 32,000 students. And actually has had some tremendous results based on some changes that they've made. First of all, their dropout rates went from 18.7% to 3.2% in 7 years. Their four-year graduation rates last year were at 90%, and they are serving a predominant number of second language students, large percentage of migrant students, large percentage of students on free and reduced lunch. They also saw dramatic decreases in the remediation rates at their partnering community college. That moved from 60% to 18%. And most of their students now are leaving high school with somewhere between 32 and 70 college semester hours. That's not quarter hours. Right. One of the key strategies they're using is to use college placement tests to give students a familiarity with what college expects of them. And they use those practice tests to give students feedback on areas that they're going to need to strengthen. They also develop modules and supports to help them strengthen those areas. For Texas students in that particular community, it starts as early as eighth grade with a version of the Texas placement test. And by the way, Texas only has one placement test. The high schools are recognizing that as a result of improved placement test sites at the high school and the students taking these early practice tests earlier, that they are able to get better prepared and be able to move forward successfully into college-level coursework. Lastly, the amendment encourages the great work that is already starting to take place in Oregon around new approaches to developmental education that can accelerate students' access and entry into college courses, such as integrating reading and writing courses, co-requisite courses, etc. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mr. Wyckoff?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff with the Oregon Community College Association. I'd like to thank Representative Comp for working with us on these two issues, and we look forward to continuing to work on this issue. One of the issues that we have gotten back from some of our members of the Council of Instructional Administrators is that, who I'll be talking to further this week and can get more feedback from, is that there are colleges, for example, that will use essay tests for adult learners where they have found that standardized tests can be problematic for adult learners because they just simply haven't been, they haven't been taking standardized tests for a long time. They haven't been in an academic setting for a long time. And so in those cases, that can put them in remedial courses when that might not be appropriate. And in an essay test, you can get a sense of their ability to follow an idea through to, you know, to get their sense of logic and things like that that may not come through as well in a standardized test. So we just want to make sure there's still flexibility to reach so we can use testing measures that work for all of our students, especially those who have been out of school for quite some time. And then just briefly on the other concept, on 2682, The one issue that we wanted to flag for that is that it's sort of in the same way that we think sometimes course numbering, which this bill doesn't deal with, sometimes gets mislabeled as the issue that is the barrier for students because they can't match a course number from their institution to another. And the reality is students don't really do that work. Advisors do that work. And we do have the issue, and Representative Comp pointed out, where students will think a class transfers and it doesn't. And the one sort of nuance we would add to that is it's often not so much the course doesn't transfer, it doesn't transfer into the major, and that they would think that it would transfer into a major, and so yes, the course transfers, but you lose the efficiency if you still have to take other courses meant for your major, and we appreciate that this is a process to look at creating some teeth there and making sure those courses transfer, but just want to make sure that sort of nuance is added, that we're usually the problem is courses transferring into major, not an institution not accepting the course altogether. Together. And I apologize for my double negative.
Thank you. The questions for this panel, Representative Gallegos.
Mr. Chair, can I make one more comment before we take questions?
Yes, Representative Cobb.
Thank you. The one thing that's not included in either of these bills, and whether Victoria wants to talk to the Speaker's office, they may need a subsequent referral if there's calculation of funding needing to be added here.
Might that go to the Education Subcommittee, Ways and Means?
It could be.
Okay, just checking. I know someone might be interested in it there. Representative Gallegos?
Thank you. Mr. Roselli, you were talking about a study in your initial presentation. Can we get a copy of that and be interested in seeing that? Certainly, the whole issue of testing is something we're a lot of talk about, and we're very anxious to really make sure that the testing we're doing is effective. I'm just curious whether or not we're talking about tests that are nationally, or are they standard nationally, or are these Oregon tests, or can you?
Representative Reed, Chair Reed, and Vice Chair Gallegos, the study by Judith was based on nationally normed tests. Mm-hmm. Accuplace or Compass are the two most popular. Oregon uses some additional ones, and in a couple of cases has institutional specific placement tests.
Yes, please.
So, I think that's the purpose of this one bill, to maybe look at our whole testing process, and certainly our K-12 achievement testing is something we want to be looking at. So how that all fits together, crosses over, whatever the term is.
Crosswalks, yeah. Very good. Other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wyckoff, the assertion is that we have more placement tests than we can shake a stick at within our colleges. I'm wondering how many of these might just be local placement tests that kind of have evolve for whatever reason and so forth, and because we've got some geographical isolation of some of our institutions, and how many of these actually have, as you mentioned, could have been designed or intended because you have a pretty diverse student population as well, and just trying to find something that enables each student to engage in a way that they're capable of, in a way that would accurately reflect then their skill level.
Chair Reed, Representative Johnson, I think that's right. I mean, for the most part, we're the colleges will be using nationally recognized standardized tests, but in consultation with faculty, several of the campuses have come up with measures that they think work best for their students. And again, the example I use is adult learners, because those are the ones that have most likely been out of an academic setting where they've been tested regularly, and so that can be disorienting and can cause difficulties that are really not related to their overall preparedness, but just related to their recent preparedness to take a test. And so a lot of the locally driven measurements are really around sort of getting at that sort of learner, and have been developed for specific purposes with their faculty.
Mm-hmm. Please.
And Hilda, you're obviously very engaged in the topic. Is it fair to say that this would be an OEIB priority? I know you're working with Representative Comp, but obviously you know the issue very well.
Chair Reed, Vice Chairs Gallegos, and Wisnet, and Representative Johnson, as you know, Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden is particularly focused on efforts that look at the transition of students, particularly in this case between high school and moving into post-secondary. So this has come up repeatedly in work that has been done around gathering information on accelerated learning, looking at transitions of students as they move forward, and also beginning to see how we can better maximize student course taking in the high schools.
Thank you. So I have a question that was sparked by what you said, Mr. Wyckoff, and it may just display my own ignorance on the topic, but you mentioned the potentially different needs of adult learners, and the bill, of course, is one of four nationally available standardized assessments. Do those four, or are there four, or some that account for that variability amongst the populations who might be using them? Do they change over time? Is four the right number? And anybody who wants to comment on that, I'd be interested.
You actually probably know
the answer to this
better than I do.
I will respond, Chair Reed. I picked the number four because Hilda gave me a chart of all the different tests that are being currently used. And if I had my way, I would have the number at two. But four seems, different institutions want to have, they need some flexibility. Uh-huh. That's the bottom line. And that would be my response, that this way we have the 17 community colleges and our seven major universities, that they should be, my estimation is they should be able to come to an agreement on at least their top four assessments that they think are appropriate.
Okay. And
it's just a gut thing.
Sure, understood. And do those are there entrants on that list from which the four might be selected that do have that flexibility so that adult learners, to pick the example that was used, would find the relevant approach?
That's where I'll let Hilda answer.
Representative Reed, that's a great question. And first of all, we do believe that this may be a timely request to our institutions to update the list from 2012, because we may find, as John has referenced, that there has been additional accommodation, particularly for the adult returning students. Right now, the data that we have is based primarily on a score on a standardized tool, with some indication that there are institutional specific instruments, but it doesn't indicate whether or not it could be an essay or not. So perhaps further research is needed on this.
Okay. Thank you. Representative McEwen, and then Reardon, and then Wisnett, please.
Okay, Reed, thank you. Yep. This is fascinating to me, and I really appreciate the work that's gone into it and the concept that's coming out of it. I've observed high schools over the years that have embraced the concept of instituting requirements for their students coming out, and their rural communities with large immigrant populations, where each student is required as a matter of course to do a community college application, a four-year college application, as they walk out the door. They all have one under their belt. I'm intrigued by the idea of the Smarter Balance test being used, in essence, in lieu of putting them through a standardized test if they've met that criteria and they do maintain a rigorous course load in their senior year of high school. I mean, I think there's some ways through this conversation to streamline a process for our high school kids that can serve us all very well as we're trying to meet those 40-40-20 goals and make sure that seamless transition is occurring. But I know school districts that are doing this and have been doing it for a very long time in our state. And I appreciate what Texas is doing, and the model's there is what I'm trying to say. How we tie all this together with a bow at the end of the day, I'm not quite sure, but I think we're on the right track.
Thanks. Representative Reardon?
I think two questions, if I may.
Thank you.
I do like the idea personally of adding
you know, making smarter balance, having an extra value. That's the way I would look at it. Some people are concerned that it's also already a high stakes test, so I guess we'd have to be a little bit careful about that, but I just think it makes a lot of sense. I wanted to check that I heard something correctly. The current test misplace people into remedial classes. Is that what I heard? At a high rate, that there are more people going into remedial programs than maybe they should. Is that what I heard?
Chair Reed and Representative Reardon, misplace is an interesting term. There's Judith's research actually refers to underplaced and overplaced, and as and I will summarize the whole study for you even more in what I send to Victoria to post for you all. But I do believe that one of the things that we're seeing is that the longer a time span between when a student took coursework that's relevant mm-hmm. and when they take the placement test, we may be seeing some misplacement at that point. Okay. We also know in speaking with a lot of staff and faculty that there's generally not even a support for the viability of some of the placement tests. I've heard numerous people say, Compass, not sure it really does what it should do. And so I don't think that everybody's satisfied with the current system, and there is a belief that some students could do better if challenged, and yet sometimes when they go into a full-length remedial course, what we're concerned about is that they don't ever really continue to progress. And the research that we looked at on recently high school graduates from Ed Northwest's longitudinal study really points that out quite vehemently.
So you have a second question, Representative Reardon? Is that right?
I did. So okay. This is probably obvious to everybody except me, but why are we just looking at community colleges and why not four-year degree programs as well? Do they not do placement?
Representative Reardon, Chair Reed, I don't have a solid answer for that, but there's so many students that are using that first 2 years of the community college. It's a starting point.
Okay.
And that's the way I see it is it's a starting point for the conversation.
Fine answer. I just thought maybe I was missing something.
No.
Representative Wisnant, you're still in the queue, but Representative McEwen hasn't answered this question, I think.
Okay, Chair Reed, I don't know if you want me. I have an answer and I have a question.
Okay,
the answer is at a four-year school, there are criteria for admission. In a community college, it's open enrollment. Anybody can apply and take coursework.
At
the university level,
answer.
You either have to meet a GPA requirement, you have to take an SAT or an ACT, so there's an entrance level that you've already hit.
Oh,
so
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good to have you.
And my question was, how difficult would it be for us to find out how many, if any, high schools across the state are actually using a placement test now in their high school curriculum as a tool? Is there a way we could find that out? So can somebody ask that question?
Good news, there's someone from the OEIB here.
Yeah, I'm sure we could figure it out, but there may already be a number, and I'd be curious to know what the outcome is of them using that already as a tool.
Okay.
Chair Reed and Representative McEwen, we'd be very happy to work on that for you and bring that back to the committee. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Wisnant, thanks for your patience.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm looking at a situation where I agree that you give the test or whatever, but what if a person says, you underplaced me or whatever, but I want to take it with the risk. As long as they know that the risk, it may, are you going to conclude that option? So if an individual says, hey, I understand I tested low and I maybe need to take remedial course, but I want to try. Is that going to
be a class, higher class?
Yeah. With knowing it's going to cost me. I think that should be an option you should consider in your
Vice Chair Wisnant, there's no reason that that can't be a consideration.
Any questions? Thank you. Ben Cannon has indicated he wants to testify too, so please don't go too far. We may have more questions.
Because I know Mr. Cannon, I think, is testifying on 26A.
Very good.
I've been in college for a while.
Unless I'm wrong, Dan. Oh, you're going to test me. Well, if you're here, I could go to committee.
Fine with us, too, Representative Compton.
Are you okay if I take off?
Yes, of course. Thanks,
Representative Compton.
Thank you.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and good discussion today, and appreciate Representative Comp bringing these two bills forward and generating important conversation in front of the committee. Just a few words on each bill. 2681, the preceding conversation, I think, related two issues that I think the bill tries to address. One is the perception of inconsistency amongst how the 17 community colleges are assessing students for placement. The second is a lack of alignment between the assessments that high schools use and administer to graduating students or 11th graders in the case of Smarter Balanced, and what community colleges administer to students for the purposes of placement. And I want to focus on that second lack of alignment, understanding that or acknowledging that that's only particularly relevant for students coming directly from high school to community college, so leaving aside the adult learners who are the majority of students that community colleges serve. Nevertheless, I think this lack of alignment between what we expect of high school students according to our 11th grade assessments and what our community colleges are using to determine placement really is a problem. And it's a matter as much of anything as of truth-telling to students. We ought to be telling them the same thing, sending the same message in 11th and 12th grade as we are in 13th if they take that step towards community college. There's a lot of work underway on this topic and on that alignment, and we've provided for you a letter that I received from the community college presidents expressing their commitment to a policy that would use Smarter Balanced scores in conjunction with 12th grade work in order to exempt students from those placement exams, assuming they transition directly to college. And I am very grateful for the efforts that the presidents and their chief instructional administrators have made to bring forward this this policy. It's been supported by staff at CCWD and the OEIB. I think there's still some technical and implementation work to do, but did want to acknowledge the efforts that are underway. I should also note that the universities, while Representative McEwen is of course right this is much less of an issue for the universities. There are still certain students at certain universities who are required to take similar assessments for placement in reading, writing, and math courses. They, too, have committed to a policy that would permit Smarter Balanced scores plus 12th grade work to essentially waive a student from the requirement of placement. So that's on 2681. 2682, I think, is an equally fascinating and perhaps even more topic, really more important topic, trying to get at the problem of credit loss, as you've discussed, between for transfer students from community colleges to universities. And I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention a study, a national study that came out last year, that described that 14% of transfer students from community colleges to universities essentially begin anew after transferring because fewer than 10% of their credits are accepted at universities. That's a national study. It's only 14%, but still probably enough to be alarming. That on the other hand, 58% successfully transferred at least 90% of their community college credits to universities. So that's the sort of better bracket. And then the rest, the remaining 28%, somewhere in the middle. So we don't have, to my knowledge, Oregon-specific data that would describe the similar numbers for community college transfer students. But we do hear, at least anecdotally, as the representative indicated and other speakers, we do hear anecdotally about this problem. I want to note for the committee and for staff just what a long-standing interest of the legislature this issue has been, and some of you know this. The Associates of Arts in Oregon Transfer Degree, the AAOT, was created as a result of legislation in 1987 to try to address this issue. The Joint Boards Articulation Committee was created by the legislature in 1992 to try to get at this issue. In 2005, the legislature passed actually a very important bill that a lot of work came out of. It was sunsetted in 2010, but Senate Bill 342, then Senator Kurt Schrader, was a driving force behind that. The Transfer Student Bill of Rights that the legislature passed in 2011 through House Bill 3521, and I would argue the creation of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission that I am executive director for was in part a response, a legislative response, to this concern about the articulation of our community college and university system. I mention the legislative history just to emphasize two points. One is that legislative involvement here and legislative sort of direction has been important and valuable. And another is that a lot of progress has been made as a result of that. Oregon actually has one of the better articulated higher education systems in the country. I would suggest that our numbers are probably better than the national figures I suggested because of things like the AAOT, the Oregon Transfer Module, and other articulation agreements that colleges and universities have come together around. So we're doing pretty well. But we've still got a ways to go. At the end of the day, I would submit this work can only be done very well by faculty coming together from community colleges, from universities, to define common learning outcomes for core courses and developing that clearly articulated and aligned system. It's a very difficult effort to try to sort of impose from above. It does require direction and expectations. I think the what I heard from Representative Kump and what I've seen in the bill suggests sort of the right model for direction setting and expectation setting. At the end of the day, on the ground, this will look like faculty from colleges and universities coming together to develop common learning outcomes, articulated courses between colleges and universities. It requires time. It requires dollars. You hear that a lot, but I think that's certainly very much the case in this one as well.
Thank you. Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I don't really expect an answer to this. I'm just going to throw it out because I'm curious, because of some of the prior conversations we've had in this committee so far this session. How does open source learning play into that? Does this complicate this issue more, or does it assist in helping streamline this process?
Representative McEwen, Chair Reed, I think that's a very big and difficult question, and I won't muster much of an answer except to say I think that the open source learning or the access of students and teachers to open source resources can help in the articulation work, in the identification of common learning outcomes. I think we see that in some of the sort of education technology space, but it's a very big question.
The world's changing.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I noticed it seemed to me you were fairly diplomatic in your sort of summation there. How should we take those comments? Are you supportive of 2682? Do you think it needs to be refined in some way, or what's your general reaction?
Representative Reed, I think the direction that it establishes very much the right one, consistent with the HEX strategic plan, consistent with the students' interest. The bill itself, you have the...
We have dash ones, which I have not fully digested, but yes, we have the dash ones in front of us too.
Right, and we're prepared. We have worked with Representative Kump and are prepared to. I think there's a form in which this bill is ready to go. I would need to confirm that it's the dash one versus something else, but I think this is certainly a worthy effort for us to be involved in.
Okay, yeah, we'd look forward to hearing from you when you're ready. Representative Rudin.
I didn't see a fiscal on this, but you alluded that there would be some cost involved, and it seemed like the potential for savings to and graduating greater numbers of students is really great if we do this, but do we have a fiscal yet, or?
I'm looking. Victoria, do you know that? We don't have one yet, it sounds like. But clearly we would need one before we move the bill forward. Okay. Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on 2681 or 2682? Don't see any, so some more work to come on those as well. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2681 and 2682. Okay. Anything else to come before the committee today? If not, having exhausted our agenda, we are adjourned.
Good job.
Thank you.